You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different with the ESO Network Patreon. The cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 234 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Sensational Wonder Woman number 13, Batman Superman number 16, Batman Catwoman number 4, Strange Adventures number 9, The Other History of the DC Universe number 3, Future State Superman vs. Imperius Lex number 3, Flash number 768, Batwoman Season 2 Episode 9, Rule number 1, Supergirl Season 6 Episode 1, Rebirth, and Flash Season 7 Episode 5, Fear Me. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright, Cletus, first up for DC News. Batman The Long Halloween cast includes Jensen Ackles, who plays the lead role of Bruce Wayne Batman, the late Glee star Nava Rivera, who died in July 2020. She voices Selena Kyle. I also wanted to note that Rivera completed her voice recording sessions for both parts of the Batman The Long Halloween. Filling out the cast are Josh Duhamel as Harvey Dent, Billy Burke as James Gordon, Titus Welliver, Carmine Falcone, David Demalassian as Calendar Man, Troy Baker as Joker, Amy Landecker as Barbara Gordon, Julie Nathanson as Gilda Dent, Jack Quaid as Alberto, Fred Tatasciore as Solomon Grundy, Alistair Duncan as Alfred. Now, part one is supposed to be releasing in late spring or early summer 2021. And I didn't see when part two was supposed to be releasing.
Yeah, and they actually put a trailer for part one out yesterday. I haven't gotten a chance to look at it yet. Just seen a couple of screenshots. Art style looks good. I'll be definitely curious to check the movie out for sure.
Me too. I didn't know the trailer came out already, so. But I'll be checking that out too. All right, up next for DC News, DC's New Gods and the Trench movies not moving forward at Warner Brothers. That didn't really surprise me at all.
No, well, especially the Trench one. Not surprising. It was a little, honestly, it was surprising when they announced it as a movie in the first place, although very much in that director's wheelhouse. I'm a little bit surprised that they canceled the New Gods one. I don't know. It's odd. I'm assuming they must have gotten intimidated by the Eternals movie for Marvel coming out and it being too similar because, well, they are. It's like the same guy made them or something. But yeah, I don't know. I'm bummed. I'm especially bummed with that one because Tom King was helping work on that script. And I mean, obviously not everybody's going to feel the same way that we do, but I was looking forward to seeing what that looked like.
Me too. And the thing about the New Gods, it's a different type of DC movie than we're normally used to seeing, superhero-wise. So I think that would have been really interesting.
I agree. Given the apparent success of the Snyder Cut, it kind of, I don't know about you, Drew, we don't have anything for sure right now, but it kind of seems like maybe they're walking back their initial move away from the Snyderverse. It feels like maybe they're reconsidering, which I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I don't know.
I got that same feeling too. Even though the news outlets keep saying that they're not, because I keep seeing things that say, you know, they're not moving forward with the Snyderverse. I have the feeling, I have the same feeling you have, that they're walking it back. So, and I've watched about half the movie so far. From what I saw of it, it's not spectacular, but it sure gives a lot more information to the story. It goes more in depth with the characters and stuff, and I've liked what I've seen so far. All right, moving on to our last bit of DC news, the Suicide Squad trailer. I finally saw that. That looks awesome.
Right, like it looks really good. And then, I don't know if you saw this, Drew. Weirdly, surprisingly, I don't know how to put it. They put out a second trailer within a couple days. It's not that much different. It's mostly the same footage. It was kind of odd. It was odd that they put out two back to back like that. But regardless, the main one, the cinematic one that they put out, I'm excited. I mean, that was a really good trailer.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm excited about checking it out.
I'm also super excited for the villain. I did not know that that was going to be the villain of the movie. So that's so good.
All right. Well, that wraps up DC news for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
What is the Rusted Robot Podcast? Hey there. This is Sean.
This is Josh.
And this is Kitty.
We're your weekly geekly pop culture news. We talk about comic books.
Movies.
Anime.
Celebrity deaths.
Collectibles.
Toys.
Movie news.
Upcoming trailers.
And so much more. Check us out on the ESO Network and everywhere podcasts are found. Your nerdy news specialist, the Rusted Robot Podcast.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Sensational Wonder Woman number 13. The issue opens up with Wonder Woman visiting the Close Foundation Pediatric Care Wing. Wonder Woman meets with both Mr. Close and his wife, social media star Natalia Close, who's a big fan of Wonder Woman. But this is in the past, though. In the present, Wonder Woman is talking with Ida Candy, and Wonder Woman learns that Natalia Close and her young son Theo have been kidnapped. There's no ransom note, but the police did find a handwritten diary. We see that Wonder Woman checks out both the mansion and then uses her lasso of truth on Mr. Close to make sure he wasn't behind his wife's disappearance. Wonder Woman takes the diary to a public fountain and sits down in the water to figure out what is going on with Natalia. I thought that was kind of funny. Wonder Woman finds out that Natalia's life wasn't as glamorous as her social media made it out to be. Natalia had a toxic relationship with her mother that made her feel like she was worthless. Her husband didn't seem to understand she needed time away from the public too. Natalia ended up taking a bunch of pills and then had delusions. Natalia then decides she must protect Theo, and it seems that she might have ran away. And that's the end of part one. I thought it was weird because a lot of these always end to be continued. This one ended saying end of part one. So I was wondering, is there more than just two parts to this story?
I'm not sure. Part of me wondered if it was going to maybe take a different narrative angle in the second one, or it was just they just weirdly decided to put that instead of to be continued. But it's possible that part two is told from like a different point of view or a different perspective. I could see that. Because they did this kind of within this comic, one thing I thought they did that was kind of interesting was they time jumped a little bit, where the first thing that we saw was implied to have been a memory of Wonder Woman's. Like she meets this woman, then we jump to what is the present of the story where she's missing. I don't know. My guess is the most likely answer is they just put that instead of to be continued for some reason. It's possible maybe they're going to do some like narrative shift in the second part. I don't know.
That could be. I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was interesting.
I liked the story quite a bit. I was iffy on the art, especially early on, but I noticed it less as the comic continued. I don't know if that's because I just got more into the story or what, but at first I was worried the art was going to really bother me, and ultimately it didn't bother me that much.
And the artwork didn't bother me at all, so. But yeah, I really like this, and I've really been enjoying this series. I'm glad we took the time to review the series.
Yeah, I mean, they've just been, for the most part, there's only been a handful of bad stories. Most of them have been pretty good. Really not any masterpieces, but entertaining. And ultimately, that's way better than some of the other ones that we read. So,
yeah, I think what I like about it is it's a fun series. It's got it's got seriousness to it, but it's also got a lot of laughs to it.
And it's got a lot of variety. And the best thing is if there's a bad story, one of the problems you get with ongoings is if they get in a bad arc, you're kind of stuck in that for at least 6 issues before there's any chance of it really improving. Whereas with these, a bad story is gone in 2 issues and you've got something completely new. You literally have a different creative team on it next story. So you just got, I mean, there's a lot of potential for obviously ups and downs with the series, but you're never going to be locked into a bad story for very long.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman Superman number 16. This issue was very different from what I was expecting, and I know I said that last week when we started talking about it, but what I really liked about this issue is it had two different stories running simultaneously through the comic. And we had Superman in the World of Tomorrow. We had Batman and Robin in the World of the Night. What was cool about it was the stories ran, they were in like film strips. Like 35 millimeter film strip kind of looking, the artwork was in. And you had the Superman strip on story on top and the Batman one on the bottom. And how I read it was I read the whole Superman story through first, and then I went back and read the Batman story because I didn't want to try jumping back and forth between them. I thought that might be a little more confusing. So I was curious to see if that's the way you read it or if you read them both at the same time.
I actually did them at the same time. So I would read the top strip. So on one page, I would read this top strip and then the bottom strip, and then go to the next page and obviously go back to the Superman story. So I kind of alternated back and forth. If it's not too confusing to somebody reading it, I would recommend doing it that way because I felt like the stories were intentionally, obviously the stories are parallel to each other literally on the page, but also the reveals happen on the same page. The first hints that something is wrong or something is different happen on the same page. Like in the Superman story, you find out Martha Wayne is still alive and is in charge of the Wayne Company on the same page that you see the Superman ship with the dead skeleton inside. So I thought reading it that way for me, because I was able to follow along with it, I liked it a lot because you could kind of see the way that the stories kind of flowed with each other. Obviously, again, literally, you're literally seeing that on the page, but also just the structure of the stories was really well played out. I thought that was it's one thing to do kind of similar stories, but they play out a little bit differently. But I thought these managed to be their own story, but you could really kind of see how they were, you know, hitting the same beats or hitting the same type of reveal while doing something different.
All right. Well, I'm going to dive into my recaps of these real quick. So first we had Superman World of Tomorrow. The Superman story begins in Metropolis. Its citizens gather to celebrate the city's latest technological achievement, the Omni Battery, a never-ending source of energy to power their homes and businesses. An unknown wizard attacks, claiming he invented the Omni Battery. Superman shows up and tells the wizard to deactivate his robots and surrender. The wizard yells, "Never," and Superman battles the robot. Lois Lane amassed the wizard to reveal Lex Luthor. Luthor states that Dr. Martha Wayne stole his idea, and Luthor claims the Omni battery isn't a battery at all. It's harvested from an organism. Dr. Martha Wayne thanks Superman for his help. Bruce Wayne introduces himself to Lois Lane and invites her to Wayne Estate. Alfred Pennyworth, who has a gun and a bulletproof vest over his suit that states security, escorts Luther to the proper authorities. Alfred calls Martha love, and she chastises him for calling her that in public. Now, back at the Daily Planet, Clark discovers that 15 years ago today, tragedy struck the Waynes. They were mugged in an alleyway. Martha survived, but her husband Thomas didn't, and young Bruce witnessed it all. Bruce was traumatized, never able to commit to anything. Lois visits Bruce Wayne at his mansion, bringing along Clark and Jimmy. Lois sneaks away to the powder room, and she uses a camera drone and discovers a network of caverns underneath Wayne Estate. Alfred discovers Lois in the cave. Superman shows up, and Alfred presses a button on his belt to become Alfred Bane. And then we see Lois falls through some hole. So that's the Superman story. Batman and Robin in the World of the Night. The Batman story begins with a food truck leaving Arkham Asylum. It is a group of villains trying to escape. Joker, Penguin, Silver Spider, and someone named Jones. Batman and Robin show up and recapture the villains. Batman has a talk with Spider Lady, Queen of Metropolis's Underworld. Spider Lady tells Batman that something happened to the Daily Planet building 2 years ago, and it's connected to Arkham Asylum. They are doing horrific things to the inmates. A secret society is behind it, and Arkham's warden is part of it. Batman and Robin find out the Spider Lady escaped before the police could bring her to Arkham. Batman decides to pay a visit to the warden before going to look for Spider Lady. Robin finds a rocket ship with an S symbol on it. It has a tiny skeleton in it. The spacecraft was a gift from a generous benefactor. And on a side note, doesn't Arkham's warden look an awful lot like Hugo Strange? At least that's what I thought. Now, back in the Batcave, Batman and Robin learn that the spacecraft was hit by a crystalline meteoroid that punched through the hull, killing the infant. Batman also figures out that the warden had been making regular trips to the Arctic Circle. Batman and Robin take the Batplane to the Arctic Circle to investigate and find some kind of fortress. Batman and Robin are attacked by henchmen, and inside the fortress, Batman and Robin find a hole burned into reality itself. Lois Lane from the Superman story falls into the Batman story, and Batman recognizes her as the Spider Lady. Now, we get a last page of this. Seems to be different from the two stories. It says it's Earth Zero, the Thermosphere. Superman and Batman are investigating a malfunction of a Wayne Tech satellite. Batman states it's not a malfunction, but an infestation. And Superman states it looks like an old film, but it is not. Suddenly, beings appear and state that Superman and Batman will be annihilated for trespassing upon the Archive of Worlds.
I think one of the things that impressed me most with this comic was how good both stories were individually. Like, obviously, I'm curious how they're going to end up tying, when we kind of know how they're tying together, but like, I'm legitimately curious to see the end of those stories more so than I am to see what's really going on outside of that with what we saw at the end of the comic. That was not that it was bad at all. It was just, for me, it was the least interesting part of it.
I have to agree with you. I really enjoyed both of those stories, and I was really into those worlds. I think the biggest shocker to me was in the Superman story, Dr. Martha Wayne. I guess the shocker in the Batman and Robin story was the fact that Superman died as an infant. We hadn't never seen that before. That was interesting.
That felt weirdly dark, didn't it?
Like, yeah, it sure did. Especially for the Batman and Robin story felt like it was lighter than the Superman story. So that felt dark in that story.
Yeah, No, that's a really good point. Especially because it was like kind of an old school Batman, but still within the Robin era. So you've got a very lighthearted Dick Grayson in that. But then in the background, you've got the skeleton of baby Kal-El in there. Like, that's I was surprised, because the comic really doesn't go out of its way to like make it seem dark. It just sort of lets it sit there and lets you kind of fill in like how brutal that is.
Yeah, it sure did. I really enjoyed this issue a lot, and I'm looking forward to reading the next one, that's for sure.
I agree. This was an excellent comic.
I think another thing I liked about it, it's definitely not in continuity. I really enjoyed it because it was different. And, you know, with a lot of the Future State ones we have read, this was a refresher to read.
I agree. And it's one of those things. I know that there's definitely some voices at DC that want to bring Elseworlds back. And this is a great argument. This comic right here, like, these are great. These on their own would be great Elseworld stories.
Totally agree. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman Catwoman number 4. The issue opens up at the skating rink. We see Joker's bomb under the ice. Bruce and Selina are about to go to a fundraising event when Selina tells him about the bomb. Selina goes down to the Batcave in her underwear and finds Angela Phantasm standing in front of the Bat computer looking at pictures of her son. Angela tells Selina she is a hostage and is holding her hostage in exchange for the Joker. Now in the future, Helena is questioning Batman's old rogues gallery, trying to find out information about her mother and the Joker. We see she visits with Penguin, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, Scarface, Mr. Zazz, Clayface, and Mrs. Freeze. Old Selina pays a visit to old Penguin to find out what he told Helena, and Selina's cat kills a penguin. Batman is able to stop the bomb that is under the ice rink back in the present time. And when Batman meets back up with Catwoman, he asks, 20 minutes? Catwoman asks, Bruce, what do you want from me? And Batman answers, where's the Joker? Catwoman tells him to bleep off, and then she rants at him to come beat her, hang her, threaten her, scare her like he does his other lovers. And then, of course, this was to be continued.
I continue to be very interested to see what the thing that King hasn't revealed is yet. You know what I mean? Like, there's some big reveal, and I'm on the edge of my seat when I'm reading. It's like, because you know that there's going to be something else. Obviously, the big, like, because he always kind of does this with his stories, where he usually starts his story with a surprise, and you're like, oh, what? Like with Rorschach, for example, we got the fingerprint at the beginning, or we've gotten, you know, in Adam Strange, there was the implication that the daughter maybe wasn't dead. But then you get other stuff as it goes on. And this, I'm so curious what it's going to be.
Do you think that it feels like maybe the Joker has something on Catwoman or something?
I don't know that that's what it is, though. It seems the what he keeps hinting at is that there's a closer relationship between the two, which he's shown us, right? But why? And I don't think it wouldn't be blackmail. And so I'm curious what it is. I'm not sure that it's I don't think it's meant to be romantic. I don't know if it's like almost like a sibling-esque thing. Like, I don't know. I'm just so curious to figure out what's like. There's clearly more there, and I'm curious to see what it is and what it's going to be.
Yeah, I'm curious also. But yeah,
The other thing I wanted to mention also is I don't know, do we consider it the present, whatever, in the future, or if that's considered the present of the story, but older Catwoman, this is now two villains that she's killed. And so it's kind of interesting seeing what's going on with that. It feels a little like she's consolidating her power base.
Yeah, I don't know. Is he trying to protect herself? Is he trying to protect Helena? We know Bruce is gone, or at least as far as we know, he's gone. I couldn't see why he'd be in hiding. Unless that's going to be the big reveal or something.
I don't think so. I don't know if it's interesting because it feels like the Joker one initially just made it seem like she was just finally getting the revenge that she had always wanted and had been unable to get, which, I mean, we're not saying that that's not the case. But then with Penguin, it doesn't feel that like that. It felt a little bit like silencing somebody and or, again, like consolidating her power base. Like, now that Bruce is out of the picture, she can eliminate the other competition. It's interesting. I'm really curious.
Yeah, it is interesting. And wow, man, Bruce was pissed when Selena told him about the bomb.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think we were surprised by that.
No, we weren't surprised by that, but I was really...
I was a little bit... I don't say surprised. It was not necessarily the thing I was expecting. I was thinking that she was going to sit on the knowledge, because I know we were talking about that last issue and how kind of insidious it was with the Joker, because he sort of just leaves it on her to decide what to do. I'm not sure that I thought that the most likely thing that she would do was actually tell Bruce.
Yeah, I wasn't sure she was going to tell Bruce, too. So I was very surprised when she did. Honestly, that's what she should have done. She did the right thing.
Right. But, oh, yeah.
But that made her come clean about her and Joker's friendship, I guess we can call it. So, and I'm curious why Selina's having a friendship with Joker when she knows how Batman feels about him. The other thing I can think of is maybe the Joker saved her at some point, and she feels the need to have a friendship with him. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. There's got to be something there, and it clearly goes back to before she knew. Like, that's the thing. It goes back. I have the feeling that relationship goes back prior to Bruce. And so, I don't know. Because she doesn't take – it's interesting because we know ultimately, the end of this story, she does kill the Joker. But she doesn't help Batman go take him down at the end of this comic. So it's just, I'm very, very curious to find out what the full story is with this.
I am too. And then in this issue, in the future, we're seeing Helena. She's bound and determined to find out the truth about her mother. So I'm curious about the reason why she's gunning so hard to find the truth out about her mother. Is she planning on putting her mother behind bars or something?
I would think so. Honestly, that's kind of what it feels like, right?
Yeah, it sure does. So I guess it's kind of interesting, their dynamic going on. So yeah, I'm excited about reading the next issue. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Strange Adventures number 9. The issue opens up on Ran. Adam Strange and his wife are standing in front of a memorial for Aaliyah Strange. And we see that this is in the past. In the present on Earth, Adam Strange is fighting against the Picts, and we see him shoot down a spacecraft. Now, in the past, we see Adam Strange use chemical warfare on the Picts. In the present, we see Batman get shot by a Pict soldier, and Adam Strange rescues Batman and takes him to get help. A report about Adam Strange and Rand comes out from the Justice League. It was released by Batman. It states that they have credible evidence that Adam Strange committed grave offenses against the Picts during the war. Adam Strange offended the Picts' honor with his actions. And Adam Strange has been officially banned from League membership, and a full report is going to be submitted to the government to see if the feds want to take actual action against Adam Strange. And the Justice League is still investigating the death of the bookstore guy. Now we see Alana goes on a news talk show. She confirms that the report is true, even the damning part. And Alana boils it down in simple terms. When your life is at stake, do you want someone who treated the Picts with kid gloves? After Phoenix, after whatever the next horrible thing they do you want it to fight fairly? Or even if it's damning, do you want someone who fought like Adam Strange on Ran? In other words, do you want to win? Mr. Terrific decides to write a letter to Alana. It starts, "There are a lot of lies going around, and I think you're ready for some truth." The issue ends with Adam and Alana snuggling in bed, talking about Aaliyah. Adam says, "Don't worry, darling. We'll see her again. There is another world." When I read that, I'm like, what did Adam Strange mean by that? And the first thing my head popped into my head is, are they going to a parallel universe? Is there another Aaliyah? Are they planning on taking her? I don't know. My mind started going weird places. But that line that he said, "There's another world," I was like, whoa. The other thought that came across my mind is this a different Earth from Earth Zero too?
Oh yeah, I assumed it was.
Did you assume that before that line, or?
Any of these miniseries that King has done, I just assume that they're their own stories. Because that's the nice thing about it. They let him take such big liberties with the characters. It just makes sense to just have it be a self-contained story.
Well, yeah, I know it's a self-contained story, but it looked like he was, from that line, it looks like they're going to go multiverse on this story. I was just curious what your thoughts were on that.
I think it's certainly possible. I think it's certainly possible. What I don't know is if King wants us to think it's going multiversal and he really means something else by that line, or it really is what we think. I don't know. I'll be kind of curious to find out.
Yeah, I'm very curious to find out too. And, I thought this was a really good issue.
I agree. And it's one of those things, this is where the reason I find him to be such a good comic writer is that how believable it is that people wouldn't all just immediately turn on Strange, right?
Right.
Just the way the report comes out, it's vague enough that you can kind of pick the things that you want to focus on out of that and make it and spin it in a way that it's positive. Like that whole thing just felt very realistic and very believable. It was just, again, I just found it incredibly well written and continue to be very enthralled by the story. And I just really want to see how this is going to all wrap up. I don't think it's going to wrap up well. That's the thing. Like, I shouldn't say quality wise, but like, I think we are definitely not on track for a happy ending.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. So I'm very curious to see where this is going. And I thought it was interesting, you know, Batman was the one that put the report out on him. He doesn't take offense to it. He still rescues Batman when he gets shot. So I think the interesting thing about the story is we see some parallels of it in the real world.
Oh, yeah.
Reports coming out and stuff like that. It's just interesting. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. The Other History of the DC Universe number 3. This issue begins with the origin of Kitana and her life before Kitana. If she wasn't happy, she was content. She had a husband named Maceo and twin boys named Yuki and Riko. As good and loving as her husband Maceo was, her brother-in-law is the opposite. He is corrupt. He craved money, so he became a criminal. He desired power, so he became a Yakuza. He lusted after Kitana, and she rejected him, and he took that as an insult. When Takeo came to take what he could not have, Maceo stood against him, and Takeo decapitated Maceo. Takeo then set the house on fire and forced Kitana to watch as her children burned. Man, that was freaking brutal to read. We see that Kitana took the katana that Takeo held, and when it was firmly in her grasp, she started hacking at Takeo, and she didn't stop until his extremities were separated from his body. And after that, she hacked up his body as well. Killing Takeo gave Kitana no pleasure, but nor did she feel any guilt. Now we see that Japan in the 1980s was a very difficult time for a single woman to find a job. Most companies hired their male employees for life, and no one wanted to give a job to a cursed woman who'd brought suffering to her husband and her male-born children. And Kitana ended up living in the street with her only possession, the sword. One night, Kitana came across a man who'd been badly beaten by two Yakuza. Kitana pulled out her sword and slayed both men. The man was immensely thankful and appreciated Kitana's skills. His name was Tadashi, and he offered Kitana a job slaying evil men. Now, Kitana went to Markova to take care of a man named Carnes. While there, she ran into Batman. Batman had put together a group of misfits that would later become known as the Outsiders. After the mission in Markova was complete, Batman brought his Outsiders back to the United States. Batman arranged for Katana to be Gabrielle's guardian. Gabby was an infusion of a human girl and some space entity, and she had immense power but no recollection of who she was before, and Katana became like a mother to Gabby as she grew up. Now, the Outsiders became frustrated when Batman kept a secret about a Markovian coup that they could have stopped, and the Outsiders forced Batman out of the group and carried on without him. And Batman ends up returning to the Justice League. Eventually, the Outsiders decide to go their separate ways, but would come back together if the need ever arose. Now, after the Outsiders disbanded, Katana went on a pilgrimage to Manzanar. In March of 1942, Manzanar became the home to 10,000 Japanese. It was not their home by choice. After the bombing of Pearl Harbor, the president signed an executive order 9066. With no due process and the opposition of the U.S. Constitution, tens of thousands of loyal, law-abiding American citizens of Japanese ancestry became enemy aliens. We find out that the Outsiders reformed and operated out of Markovia. Katana was excited to be back together again with Gabby, but this version of the Outsiders did not have Jefferson and Rex. This team included Joffrey the Technocrat, Faust the Magician, Wild a Werebear, and Emily the Looker. After Gabby's death, Katana returned to taking souls. One night in a park, Katana comes across some man selling weapons. Katana killed them all except for a boy that reminded her of her boys, and she let him go. Lady Shiva attacks, stating that Katana had shamed herself, and Lady Shiva was here to relieve Katana of the Soul Taker. Lady Shiva kicked Katana's ass and stole the sword, leaving Katana alive and humiliated. When Katana went to steal the sword back from Lady Shiva, Tadashi was there. He had hired Lady Shiva to steal the Soul Taker for him, and Katana fought Lady Shiva and was killed. Not wanting to be dead, Katana pulled the sword out of her body and lived, and Lady Shiva and Tadashi ran. After Katana resurrected and healed, she fought again with the Outsiders, taking on Cobra, Steppenwolf, and then finally Katana hunted down Tadashi and struck him down. Katana was liberated. And that basically sums up the issue there. A lot going on in this issue. A lot to sum up, let me tell you.
I mean, another great issue in the series. Do we know how many? Is this the last one? Or are they doing another one?
I honestly don't know. I think there's more, I think. But I haven't seen anything yet.
My only real complaint with the series as a whole, and I thought this one in particular, was how much not a comic it is. It's very well written. It's a very good story. It's not a comic. It's an illustrated book at best. And I thought, to me, I don't know about you, Drew, I thought this one was the most guilty of that. And again, to be clear, that's a nitpick because the story, like I said, it's very well written. It's good. It's just not a comic.
I have to agree with you. This was definitely not a comic. I mean, none of them really been a comic. They've all been illustrated stories. But it's really well written, and I like how he does a good job of taking comic fiction and mixing it with real world history, and doing a good job of tying it together, how both the real history and the comic history affect the characters. I think he does a real good job of that. One of the things. I don't know if it's really a complaint or not, but the beginning of the issue really focuses on Katana, but as we get farther into the comic, it seems like it's more about the Outsiders than just Katana herself. And maybe that's because, you know, there wasn't enough to tell about just Katana's personal life, and she did spend a lot of time with the Outsiders.
One thing I thought was interesting with this, also within the story itself, was his decision to have the katana just be a sword. Like, she's like, I just like killing people. It's not absorbing souls. I just kill people.
Yeah, that I did find that funny too. But he did still kind of reference it as, yes, it took souls, but it wasn't like magical or anything.
Well, I think he meant it took souls in that it killed people. So I guess technically their souls are leaving. But he, I don't know, he seemed to pretty, to me at least, when I was, it seemed to heavily emphasize the fact that like any thing, all of the mysticism around that character was essentially other people just assuming that, or her kind of allowing that legend to be out there because she was Asian. And so people just assumed that it had to be a mystic thing and that she couldn't just be, you know, a lady with a sword.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. The story left off in the mid-90s, so my gut's telling me there's more of them coming. I have a feeling it's going to bring us into the, you know, present times. But we'll have to wait and see. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State Superman vs. Imperius Lex number 3. The issue opens up with the United Planets discussing what to do with Lexer. It is decided that Lois and Superman will return to Lexer to inform the people that they will be welcome United Planet worlds, and if possible, to bring the dictator Lex Luthor to justice. And should Superman and Lois not return, a plaque will be set up on this very site. Now, on Lexer, Lex is trying to come up with a solution because his energy crystals are useless. He feels like a Beanie Baby collector. Now, while giving a speech to his people, Lex blames X-99 for allowing Lois Lane and Superman to escape. X-99 is banished from Lexer forever. We see that X-99 is banished to the moon of Lexer, and he comes across the Reluctance. He reactivates them in hopes to make Lexer rich again and find favor once again with the Benefactor. The Reluctance attack the closest planet, Lexer. Superman and Lois arrive on Lexer to find chaos, and Superman battles the Reluctors while Lois sends out a broadcast to the planet. Superman battles Lex, and when the people hear Lois's message, they realize they can leave the planet and that Superman has come to save them. Lex realizes he's been defeated. He surrenders. X-99 states that Lexer can be the ruler of his cell, and that he will be with him always. This was a fun title to read.
Oh yeah, it did not disappoint. Yeah. When we saw that this was Mark Russell, I think both of us were pretty excited because we really enjoyed his Wonder Twins book. I liked his Flintstones run that he had earlier. He's really good. I mean, this is exactly what I was kind of hoping the book would be. This is another great, if you enjoy Mark Russell's stories, you're going to like this title because it's a classic, you know, kind of Russell story. If you don't, you're not going to like this one either.
I really enjoyed it. It was definitely one of the better Future State stories.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially, and it was really one of the only ones that just kind of did its own thing. There was a handful, obviously, like the Future State Wonder Woman did her own thing, but even she popped up in other stuff, but that title was very much its own story. The ones that were the best Future State stories were the ones that just sort of, I thought, actually utilized the whole point of Future State. And the ones that were really just ongoing titles, but with a different status quo, were the ones that didn't work out very well.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It looked like this wrapped up this story, too. I don't think we'll be coming back to it anytime. Which is nice. It's a nice three-part self-contained story. Which, honestly, what the rest of the Future State should have been. Instead of rehashing them in the present, which it seems like we're doing. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Flash 768. The issue begins with Wally telling Barry and the whole Justice League that he's quitting being the Flash. Wally wants to live a normal life with Linda and the kids. Wally decided to cut off his connection with the Speed Force. And right when Barry was about to sever Wally's connection to the Speed Force, a surge of energy washes over both of them. Wally disappears, and Barry's lost his speed powers. Wally wakes up dressed like Tarzan, and when he looks around, he's in the Age of the Dinosaurs. Now, Max, Jay, and Wallace all report that they've lost their connection to the Speed Force, and Barry and Mr. Terrific find a way for Barry to talk to Wally through the Speed Force. When Wally sees his reflection in the water, it's not his face, and it looks like he's some sort of caveman or something. Wally is glad to still have his speed, but he can't seem to go fast enough to time travel. Wally gets chased by a Velociraptor who also has speed powers. Suddenly, the Velociraptor starts vibrating until speed energy explodes out of it, and it sends Wally into the future. In the future, Wally discovers he has the body of Bart Allen, Impulse. A giant Dominator reaches its hand out and grabs Wally. And Gold Beetle is there, telling Impulse to run. I gotta tell you, Cletus, I was very surprised about what this issue was about. I was not expecting all this stuff to happen. I was not expecting Barry to lose his powers, Wally to be thrown into the age of the dinosaurs, being a totally different body. This is a very interesting story. I found it fun. I found it funny. Even with the Wally murder stuff kind of hanging over it, it still is a fun comic, and it feels like this is going to be the redemption of Wally finally, and we're going to move past that stuff.
That's awful optimistic of you, Drew. I like you. I had no idea what this comic was going to be, so literally anything would have been like, okay, I guess this is what we're doing. I personally really don't like the art style that we got. I think it can work in something else. I just don't know for a superhero comic if it's the right style. That's just me. And then story-wise, I just kind of thought it was stupid. I thought it had the premise of a lighthearted comic, but it wasn't written like a lighthearted comic. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, it was written a little too seriously. So if the comic was written fully tongue-in-cheek, I think this plot could have worked. But it didn't. It felt like they were taking it a little bit seriously when you've got Wally in the body of a caveman and then in the body of Bart with Gold Beetle showing up. You know what I mean? Like, if this was satire, or if it was like a Mark Russell version of this story, probably would have been freaking hilarious. But what we got, I thought, was just not very good.
All right. I was curious if you're going to like this. I liked it. I thought it was a good mix of serious and fun. Apparently you didn't like it.
I think it could be really fun. It's got a speedster caveman and then Gold Beetle, whose mere existence is a joke. Like, there's lots of comedy material there. I just didn't think the comic was all that funny. I thought the comic was confused at what it wanted to be. And again, I also do think that the art played a very serious role in that, because it's not whimsical art. It's also not entirely serious art to me, but partly because I just think the quality isn't very good. But it's just one of those things, like, both the writing and the artwork felt confused on whether this was a funny book or a serious book.
Now, I had to go back and look at it to comment on the art. I have to agree with you. Some of the art does not look good. Some of it does. It's like a mix of, I think it's like a mix of good and bad in it. I see what you mean. Some of the characters look kind of goofy in it. And then there's others that don't look as bad.
And I'm pretty sure this is the same artist that we had in the Future State Flash, and it was also not good. So, again, art is totally subjective, so not everybody's going to feel this way, but it really was not for me. And it played a very big role in my enjoyment of the comic, but I also, again, I just thought the writing was not there either for me.
I see your point in the artwork kind of taking away from the story. I know for you, the artwork can affect the story a lot more than me, because I have a tendency sometimes to read, and I'll ignore the artwork. I won't pay as close attention to it if I get into the story. So sometimes the artwork when it's not as good, sometimes it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. That's just me.
For me, I think artwork is, I mean, it's what makes a comic. It's not just the writing. And there are oftentimes, I think there are certain comics that we both enjoy. And I think the art can be more responsible for that than maybe we're conscious of, because it can cover up for certain things. You can maybe have like a line of dialogue or something, or maybe a plot point that doesn't make a ton of sense, or maybe isn't the best choice, but the artwork kind of covers for it. If you've got really clear artwork that's telling just as much of the story as the written word is, it can make up for some of that. Where we've also had comics that maybe weren't as badly written as they seemed, but the art was so bad that it had to rely entirely on the written word telling the story. And when there's any, like I said, any sort of slippage, then the whole story seems bad because the only thing that was carrying it was the writing. Again, that's purely subjective. That's just my opinion. But I just think any good comic has got to have both good art and good writing. Otherwise, I mean, it can be pretty good, but any great comic's got to have both.
Yeah, I agree with you. Most great comics do have both, so. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
What is the Soul Forge podcast? Join Sean and his guests as they talk about sex, geekiness, witchcraft, Star Trek, awkward dates, poetry, life, the universe, and everything else. Interviews have included writers, atheists, a rap star from Australia, a reality TV star, and a sex goddess from San Diego. If you have a story to share or just want to listen to one, check out the Soul Forge podcast. The Soul Forge. Let's find out together.
And we're back. Let's talk Batwoman, Season 2, Episode 9, Rule Number 1. The episode opens up with Kate Kane's funeral. Julia Pennyworth found a skull bone outside the shores of Bloodhaven that matched Kate's DNA, and she had 3 different labs confirm it. Ryan has a desert rose that she planted in the Batcave in honor of Kate. A month later, Ryan's ex, Angelique, comes to her new apartment. With Ocean MIA, Angelique claims she wants to get out of the snakebite business and wants Ryan back. The police commissioner was gunned down on the steps of Gotham PD headquarters by the False Face Society while checking the security footage 5 minutes before and 5 minutes after the killing have been scrubbed from the footage. Mary is able to find a witness who was spray painting "Defund the Police" on the building, and it was Sophie's sister. Ryan learns that Angelique drove the getaway car for the False Face members that killed the police commissioner. She didn't know what they had planned. She was just doing this last job to get out. When Angelique decides to testify against the False Face Society, Black Mass has her captured. Batwoman goes to rescue her and gets captured herself. And when Black Mass tries to saw her in half, Sophie shows up to rescue her thanks to Luke. Angelique confesses to killing the commissioner even though she didn't do it. Black Mass has threatened to kill Ryan if she didn't confess. Julia Pennyworth starts investigating Kate's plane crash. Julia discovers she already investigated it 1 month ago and has missing memories. At the end of the episode, we see that Black Mask has Kate Kane prisoner. Her face got destroyed fighting Black Mask men when they pulled her from the plane. A woman named Enigma states it's time to say goodbye to Kate Kane.
One thing I appreciated that this episode did was that it didn't even bother trying to explain how stupid the ending of the last episode was. It just sort of rolled with it. I have to admire it for that, because they had to be like, wow, there's really no good explanation for how she's able to get back to Gotham in time and how they happen to have a desert rose flower conveniently. So let's just not explain it. Let's just leave that stupid plot point out there and not address it. I admire them. It's a great choice on their part, honestly. And that's not even being sarcastic. Like, I legitimately mean that. Like, if you've got something that stupid, frankly, the best thing to do is to just ignore it. Because anything you do to try to explain it's just going to make it worse.
Totally agree. I thought it was interesting how they ended the episode with Kate Kane not having a face. Because that opens the door to exactly what Black Lightning did with their character who left the show. Bringing in a new face with Kate's face gone. If they wanted to bring back a different Kate, they could easily cast a new actress in that spot. And just say that she had reconstructive face surgery done.
I agree that they could do that. I just don't know why. Because they clearly want this new... I don't think there's any doubt that Ryan is the new Batwoman, right? And I don't disagree with that. So I don't understand why they would want to linger on Kate's character. The best way to move forward with a new Batwoman is to stop focusing on the old Batwoman.
This show can't for some reason. What they should have done in the first episode is just had her be dead, but they don't want to do it for some reason. And I honestly think that we're going to see a new Kate Kane show up later this season.
Drew, I agree with you. And honestly, to be completely honest with you, it wouldn't stun me if we saw the actress return also. Again, I don't know why any of the involved parties would want that, but it wouldn't shock me if it happened. I just don't get it. I just don't understand why. Why not just tell a new... Especially because we've gotten out of... I understand that you've got to do something. This happened so abruptly, and it happened when you didn't even get to finish the first story that you were telling. So that's a mess. And I do sympathize with the story for that, with the show for that, because that's brutal, right? You didn't even get to finish that story, and then your lead actress left the show. That's tough. But as bad as it was, you've told the story to kind of get out of that, and now you can just kind of hit the ground running with a new character, and they're not doing it. And that's the thing I don't get.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And they have all this baggage of last season's characters. They really need to move on from some of these characters. Alice needs to go. I'm sorry. I feel like her story is done, but they just keep dragging it on and dragging it on.
I don't think she'll be done, Drew. I think she's going to be on the show as long as that show is on. I just don't see a way that Alice gets written off.
I see that. I see that's what they want, but I think that's
clear. I agree with you. She should be gone. I totally agree with you, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
Mary fits in good with the story, but I don't think we really need to have the dad around anymore and Alice. I think we could move on from some of these characters, but I don't think the show's going to. And honestly, it doesn't look like it's going to move away from Kate either. I have a feeling Kate's going to come back, but she's going to come back but not be Batwoman. And it kind of doesn't make any sense.
The thing I think the thing to pay attention to and to keep an eye on is, presuming this gets a season 3, which I think it already has.
Yes, it already has. It's already been renewed.
Yeah, so I think the thing to pay attention to is going to be seeing how the cast changes in between seasons 2 and 3. In part, I'm sure contracts are a part of that, but also, you know, again, it's tough because of everything that went into in between the first two seasons. I think the transition in between these is going to be a lot more normal, and they're going to have more time to kind of figure out what they want to do. That could be potentially where we start to see some shifts on the show and shifts in the cast.
And hopefully better stories.
Hopefully.
And that's all we have to say about that. Yeah. All right, moving on to our next episode for this week. Supergirl, Season 6, Episode 1, Rebirth. Okay, I got to tell you, Cletus, I started watching the episode, and I just felt like it had been too long since I'd seen the other episode. I actually went back. I actually got online, went to our podcast website, brought up the last episode we talked about Supergirl on, went to the table of contents, went to that time frame, and I listened to recap of and talk of Supergirl just to refresh my memory what was going on, because I had totally forgot.
That is so much better. I thought you were going to tell me that you had actually went back and rewatched the episode. I was like, true, why?
No, I didn't rewatch it. I wanted to listen to our talk on it from last time. Oh, and my recap of it, because I didn't want to rewatch the whole episode.
Yeah, that's so much better. Oh my gosh, I have to say, it's interesting to me that Flash is the only show that really just basically was like, we didn't finish our season, so we're just going to finish it essentially the way that we would have anyway. I'm sure with minor changes, but for the obviously Ralph being one of them. But for the most part, the season, I think we saw essentially played out the way roughly it was going to anyway. All of the other shows, I think, probably hit major points that they were going to hit anyway, but did it completely differently. Like this one, they wrapped up the Leviathan within the opening credits. Leviathan was done. And then the rest of the episode, we assumed Lex was going to be the threat for the season. And not that I'm assuming he'll come back. But they wrapped up Lex in this episode, too. They basically just wrapped up the entire season in one episode. And that clearly, I think, would have been at least, two or three more, I think, if I remember correctly.
This felt like a season finale to me.
It did. It did, but it felt like they condensed it. I think it was, if I remember right, I think they had two episodes left, and they condensed it into one, which I thought was interesting. So they did it somewhat similar to Flash in that we got really what was the end of the previous season, but it felt like they jammed it all into one.
All right.
That being said, it was bad, especially the opening sequence. I thought it was terrible, but I have to admire them. They got all the bad out of the way at once. So I'm more hopeful for episode two than I was for Flash episode two, for example, just because it's a fresh start and they can maybe hit the ground running on a new story.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. The beginning, I did not like the beginning of this episode, but by the end, I thought it was a lot better. So maybe that's because they crammed everything into one episode.
I think, and I was trying to think about this, Drew. I wanted to get out, like, I did not like this episode. Like I said, I especially didn't like the beginning. But I wanted to kind of figure out a more specific reason other than it's not good. And I think the thing that really bothered me with this episode wasn't anything it did. It was more just sort of, it showed how frivolous a lot of these plots have become in the CW universe. They were able to wrap up the entire season in one episode, right? We're pretty sure that it should have been at least one more after this, but they were able to easily wrap it up in one. And I thought, to me, especially with how easily they took care of Leviathan, obviously it's fictional, so you can resolve the story anytime you want, but that was sort of the point, is that these stories just feel really cheap. They feel really hollow. Like, you could end them at any time, and the only reason that these plots don't end is because they've got to fill a 22-episode season, not because the story naturally takes that long to tell. You know what I mean? Like, Watchmen. Let's think about Watchmen. You couldn't have ended that show earlier than what you got, I don't think.
I agree with you. You wouldn't have been able to.
I thought that was the perfect length show. It hit all of the plot that you wanted, but it didn't stretch it out. It didn't rush it. It was the perfect length. That show, to me, felt like it needed that exact number of episodes. And the ending of what ultimately is the ending of last season of Supergirl, this episode, felt to me like that could have been any time. It was so easy and so frivolous in the way that the villains are taken down. Honestly, both. I mean, obviously Leviathan was much worse and a lot cheaper, but really Lex too. That could have happened at any point, Drew. That episode could have happened in episode two last year. I think that's the thing that bothers me. I think it's just, it doesn't feel like these plots
are, there's no complexity to them. They're just sort of, they just exist. And a lot of these episodes that we watch, they're just kind of there because there's an hour time slot to take up, not because there's a meaningful story to tell. And that's not to say that we don't get good episodes. We do. But the plot as a whole is so weak that we got a wrap up to that story that could have, I don't feel like that had to have happened then. They could have, that episode would have made just as much sense 5 episodes into the season as it did now.
I see what you're saying. All right, let me recap this thing since I haven't done that yet. So Dreamer and Supergirl team up and are able to save Brainiac. Lex Luthor has Leviathan's power transferred into himself. Everyone that was in the VR and been programmed with a I Love Lex program so they can never do wrong. The satellites he put in orbit are there to obliviate anyone that didn't get programmed to love Lex. Dreamer has a vision of Lex as the anti-monitors destroying every planet in existence. Supergirl has offered to surrender to Lex if he gives them a way to disable his satellites, and Lex agrees to meet her at the Fortress of Solitude. John and McGann are able to destroy Lex's satellites, and Lex kills Supergirl, but Lena has a protocol that revives Supergirl once the satellites are destroyed. Dreamer and Alex are able to retrieve the Leviathan container from Otis and Lex's mother, and Otis and Lex's mother escape through a portal. Lex Luthor has a We Are the Champion scene where he's dancing around playing with the weapons in the Fortress of Solitude before blowing him up. I gotta say, I did find that hilarious. Supergirl and her team showed up and we get a climactic battle with Lex. Lex fires the Phantom Zone projector at Kara while Alex hits Lex with their special gun. Lex's powers are gone, but Kara is now trapped in the Phantom Zone and Lex says he's won. Lex goes to jail, but Lena shows up with Myriad and uses it on Lex and her mother to wipe their minds of Supergirl's secret identity. Alex becomes Sentinel thanks to John, and the episode ends with Kara in the Phantom Zone, unconscious while she's surrounded by beings that are floating. So the story ends with Kara in the Phantom Zone. But I gotta tell you, I know they want to do a story with Kara in the Phantom Zone, but it feels like to me she's only going to be in there probably for one episode.
And part of that has to come down to the network and the show that it is. They can't afford for her to be in the Phantom Zone. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, she's the lead.
we just got obviously a different show, but we just saw them try to do a Mediterranean setting in which all of the characters have their breath showing at night because it's being filmed in Vancouver. they can't heat the set enough for to not have their breath showing. Ugh.
I can't remember what I saw that. I saw that on one of the other shows this week. It might have been The Flash. I can't remember. But I was like watching it. I'm like, oh, I see their breasts.
Batwoman one was the one that stuck out to me because they were, it was, I don't know that I've seen it that visibly before I think it's normally I wouldn't notice it because like an Arrow, they're outside a lot. And if you can see their breath, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. They're outside. Starling City is supposed to be basically Seattle. It's like, okay. Yeah, for sure. I can see that. But the Batwoman one got me because they were supposed to be in the Mediterranean and their breath was very noticeable. When Alice and Sophia were talking to each other, it was literally all I could focus on. And I was like, wait, you guys know. Like, I understand you can't help it because you're in Vancouver, but nobody on set was like, hey, this isn't good. Maybe we should find another way to film this. I know we're getting off onto a different show, but this is the same thing. Like, I agree with you. We're not going to see Kara in the Phantom Zone for long as they can't afford to do it.
Yeah. So I was thinking, why? I know they wanted to send Kara there. They could have easily sent another character there. They could have sent Alex there. We could have had some interesting stories with Alex in the Phantom Zone, or Martian Manhunter, or Dreamer, or somebody else. You know what I mean? And I just think putting Kara in there is just a waste of time because she's going to be right back out next episode. I don't know. I think part of the problem with these CW shows are that the stakes don't feel as real as some of the other shows we watch. Like Doom Patrol, or like you said, The Watchmen, or even Swamp Thing. When we reviewed that first season.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something I started talking about last week, too, is just the... I don't feel like I'm watching a story. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm watching a TV program in which actors are delivering the weekly story. And I know literally that is what it is, but Superman and Lois is the only one that feels actually like a story. It feels like when I'm watching Watchmen, I feel like I'm watching the story, right? Like I'm tuning in because I really want to live in that world and I'm experiencing that world. And the only one that comes close to that on the lineup right now, for me at least, is Superman and Lois. And like I said, I have a number of problems with that show, but it's the only one that I actually like feel like I'm watching a world and I'm watching people interact normally in that world and I'm not just watching actors play a role.
I have to disagree with you. I think Black Lightning does a pretty good job of it too.
That's true. I have to take that back. That is true. Black Lightning felt a little bit, I think in part because of the recasting, it's felt a little bit wonkier this season. But yes, I agree with that. Black Lightning is the other one that I do feel like I'm watching characters. But again, like, so getting into that, and then like I said this week, the plots are just they're frivolous. I don't know. I'm sure there's other words you could use, but that's what it feels like to me. That just, it doesn't matter. Like you said, there's no stakes because the main character is obviously not going to die. The plot is meaningless because, again, you could resolve a lot of these plots anytime you want. One of the worst offenders of this was Flash a couple of years ago with Cicada. That plot literally should have ended multiple times, and it didn't for no real good reason. And we got it, and we just got this with Supergirl. It, again, just kind of demonstrating how unnecessary a lot of the story is. And that's a problem. These stories should feel necessary. Like when I watch an episode, I should feel like that mattered. Season 1 of Flash, I thought a lot of those episodes felt like they mattered. I felt like I needed, like every episode was like, oh yeah, wow, it's building a story. Or like early seasons of Arrow really felt like they mattered. It felt like they were building something. And it just, anymore, they just, I don't know. They just feel so cheap. And I don't know if part of that is because we're getting better superhero shows elsewhere. I mean, we got Watchmen, which is one of the best shows I've ever seen. Marvel's doing their thing on Disney Plus now. We've got stuff on Doom Patrol. Frankly, even Titans, which is not a perfect show by any means. Titans, I think, is generally able to do a story better than a lot of these CW shows. And it's disheartening.
It is. All right, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Flash, Season 7, Episode 5, Fear Me. The episode opens up with Barry trying to figure out how to track the creature that attacked him last episode. A creature that Cisco names Furza, because She-Hulk was taken. Cecile gets a scare from someone in a straitjacket and glowing purple eyes. Joe's comes into the room and Cecile realizes it wasn't real. A Speed Force storm happens at Star Labs and a woman falls from the ceiling and Barry catches her. Flash races to stop a robbery only to find the guards are hallucinating a monster. A villain in a purple mask shows up, and even though Barry slaps metahuman handcuffs on him, the villain is able to show Barry his fears. And first he takes on Reverse Flash, and then Flash is stabbed through the back by Savitar. Cisco names this new villain Psyche. Psyche's powers of fear are so strong that Savitar's stab causes Barry's mind to create the wound. Psyche strikes again, and Flash, Vibe, and Frost show up wearing the mind dampeners they use against Gorilla Grodd. They don't work against Psyche. Frost sees a vision of getting arrested, and it was Caitlin that turned her in. Vibe also has a hallucination, but we don't get to see what it was. Barry throws his speed lightning at Psyche, but he just absorbs it. And then he gives Flash his biggest fear. All his friends and family are killed by Furza. Flash teams up with Cecile to stop Psyche. Barry has Cecile use the Thinker's chair to broadcast his courage. and Cecile becomes the new Professor X when her wave of courage takes out Psych. Barry's powers start freaking out, and Barry puts himself in the cryopod. We see an agent sent from the governor's office is here to apprehend at all costs the rogue metahuman fugitive known as Killer Frost. The episode ends with Nora Allen telling us she's the Speed Force in physical form. She's been attacked by two other forces that are represented by Furza and Psych.
The story that we all longed for, Drew.
I know, but I have to say I did enjoy this episode more than the last couple ones we've had. And maybe that's because it felt like Psych was it felt like he was more of a threat than some of the other villains we've seen recently. I don't know. I thought they did a good job of making Psych a real threat. But I got to tell you, I was not happy to see the power show up.
I mean, it's tough, Drew, because I agree that he was more of a tangible threat than like Abracadabra, for example, but he also still felt like every other villain of the week. And ultimately, he's taken out like a villain of the week. I know that we're going to see him again, and I know that he's more powerful than your normal villain of the week, but ultimately, that's kind of what this episode was, right? Like, this was indistinguishable from a normal weekly Flash episode.
Yes, it was definitely...
Theoretically, he's fighting one of the ongoing bad guys, at least for a while. I mean, I don't know for how long in the season, but you know what I mean? Theoretically, this villain's sticking around, but it was, for all intents and purposes, was a normal weekly villain Flash episode, and that's the tough thing, where like, yes, I agree, power level-wise, threat level, he was more threatening, but ultimately, I didn't really feel it, because the episode felt and was a normal weekly Flash episode. So I just didn't, the stakes were never there for me, and the show never convinced me otherwise, because it just, like I said, it just went through the motions.
Yeah, I see what you're saying about going through the motions. It definitely had the villain of the week vibe to it. But yeah. I don't know. I felt more invested in this episode than the last couple ones anyways.
I'll give you, it was a better done episode. I will agree with that, but it's just the underlying problems that I'm having with the show are still there. It's just, it's incredibly formulaic. It feels like the show is really, really banking on its self-mythology. Like, that was the huge problem with the Barry Iris love being the engine of the Speed Force thing, was just how, like, self pleased they were with their own mythology. That's the show continues to feel like it's banking on that, with having Cecile sit on the thinker chair. It didn't feel to me, Drew, it didn't feel like a clever solution that I think it was meant to be. It felt like remember when we did this? And it was just, it felt cheap. It was like, it didn't feel like that naturally belonged in the story. It felt like it was the show kind of being like, remember when we did the thinker? I don't know. It feels like a show that is just sort of, I don't know how else to word it, like, about itself. Like, it's just constantly celebrating itself as a show and not, you know, doing a story. It's just sort of congratulating itself on being the Flash.
Yeah, I see what you're talking about.
There's just so much self-referential stuff in it. And that stuff can be kind of funny. And like, when you kind of wink at that every once in a while, I have no problem with that. I love breaking the fourth wall. But it feels like it's like it feels so core to the show, the way these episodes are structured, that it seems it's not a wink at the audience. It feels like that's what the show is trying to be, is basically just like referencing itself constantly. In which case, like, well, okay, I'm glad that you're referencing these other Flash stories. Maybe tell another one. That would be a good idea. I liked early Flash because they were good. It was a good show. It had a good plot. I don't need to be reminded. Remember the one time we had a good plot? Let's keep doing that. Let's just keep remembering that plot instead of doing something new. we're doing another memorable plot. Let's just remember the other one collectively.
Okay, there was one thing that really irritated me this week, and that's why when I was watching all the CW shows, they kept having the Flash commercial play, and I kept hearing over and over Chester going, "The Flash doesn't have big fists, he has a big heart." I was like, "Please, I want to punch you in the face, Chester."
But this is what I'm saying. That's what I'm getting at. Our last podcast, it feels like they're just writing for commercials. That line felt like it was written specifically for a TV spot like that. What a perfect line to slice out and put into a commercial. It's terrible. I agree with you. But like that is like custom written to be in a commercial. Ugh. I'm frustrated because I really want to like The Flash. I want when I turn on The Flash, I still get excited. I'm like, ooh, it's time to watch The Flash this week. And it's just, I know it can be better. I know this show can be better than what it is.
We know it can be better because we've seen it better. And I sure wish we could get back to that. I don't know. Part of the problem with these shows might be the showrunners that are running them now. Compared to who started them.
Well, and see, that's where you get into tricky ground, though, because we know what happened with one of the original Flash showrunners.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I've had the same thought, and then I'm like, but yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if it's just this was inevitable, that this is how these shows were ultimately going to – they work well when they had a really – I feel like one of the things that made The Flash Season 1 work well was that they had this story to tell, right? And it took them – obviously there was some filler, but for the most part, it took them a season to tell that story. And most of the seasons since then have been more just like the next season of a TV show instead of being the next chapter of a story. I know that they would view it as the next chapter, but they've felt more and more just like, well, this season, this is the big bad for this season. And so now we're going to do the same thing we did last season, but with this guy. And then you hit relatively the same beats. It doesn't feel like we're watching a story to continue to unfold. It feels like we're watching the actors do the same play, but with different costumes.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And to be clear, other shows had this too. Arrow season 1 and 2 felt like a natural progression of a story. One of the things that made season 2 so good was how well the flashbacks tied into the present of the story and how well that tied into what had been built in the first season. So the first season builds that flashback on the island up. You start to develop the Slade, Oliver relationship, and then that pays off huge in the second season. That is a phenomenal season. But then season 3, it becomes the next season of a TV show. Well, we've run that story that we planned and came up with is now done. Now what do we do? Well, now it's the next season. So let's introduce a new bad guy. Let's introduce a new plot because we do flashbacks. Let's introduce a new plot for the flashback, regardless of whether it's good, which it wasn't, or if it makes sense, which it didn't. And that was sort of the problem. Obviously we eventually got another good season or two out of that show, but that was one of the big road bumps that show hit, was that they like ran out of what the story was that they had to tell. And then it just kind of became a TV show that has another season. It just sort of became, these are serialized stories, but in a lot of ways, they're more sitcom-y. Like you've got your cast that you love, and the cast has all the kind of specific quirks that they do. And you kind of look forward to seeing that quirk every episode. And each episode is relatively meaningless one to the next. That's just sort of what a lot of these feel like now. That there's no meaning to them. They are technically serial. Like we are getting, theoretically, an ongoing story. But really, they really are more of just a modern sitcom in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And I say this as somebody who, again, I really want to like The Flash. I loved that show when it first came out. And I've still sort of lied to myself as the seasons have gone along.
And I think part of it is how good some of the other stories have been in other shows. Like Doom Patrol was so good. Watchmen is so good. Swamp Thing was really good, despite being kneecapped by its studio. And then like the stuff that we're seeing over on Disney Plus is really good. So we're seeing these really well done superhero TV shows. And I know that at one point, that's what the CW shows were. They were the best thing we had seen so far. And I don't think it's just that they've been eclipsed by something better. I mean, that has happened. But I also think that they've gotten worse. I think it's a mixture of the two. I think we've seen a better version of a superhero show now. And so there's a different – we're looking at a different grading scale than when we were at the beginning of these. But I also do think that they've gotten actually worse themselves. And so even within their own scale, even just within the CW scale, they're not hitting the marks that they used to.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Well, since you used our podcast as a resource, I also wanted to actually shout-out to our podcast as well. If you want a good refresher, and I don't know, I have to admit, I don't know the exact episodes for this, but if you want a good refresher on why Drew and I are dreading the upcoming Flash plot, go back and listen to our episodes on the other forces in the Flash title that we reviewed by Josh Williamson. I distinctly remember saying that nobody was going to remember these plots, and I have to admit right now on the podcast that I was wrong about that, clearly. I really just did not imagine that somebody was going to look at those terrible comics and be like, but what if we did a TV show with them?
Yeah. All right, and for my shout-out, this week my shout-out's to Angela Pritchett for letting me know about Marvel's new Star Wars High Republic comic series. Issues 1 through 3 are currently available, and I'm having a blast reading about an era of Star Wars I know nothing about during the height of the Jedi and the Old Republic. So it's cool to see new characters and stuff I haven't read before, you know what I mean? And also enjoying not having to take notes on it.
Not all of their Star Wars stuff has been a hit, but Marvel, for the most part, has been doing really well with their Star Wars comics.
So I'm enjoying them. So I'm excited about issue. I'm not sure when issue 4 is going to be. I have to start paying attention to when this is coming out. But I'm enjoying the series so far. So I'm glad she posted about it, and I was like, ooh, Star Wars High Republic, and decided to check it out. Ryan, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about this week, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Sensational Wonder Woman, Far Sector, Batman, Crime Syndicate, Green Lantern, The Swamp Thing. We've got the CW shows Supergirl and The Flash. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.